Good morning, Colorado. You're listening to the Daily Sunup. The Daily Sunup podcast is a conversation with the Colorado Sun. See our trust indicators at coloradosun.com/ethics. It's Tuesday, July 2nd. Today, Sun business reporter Tamara Chung has updates and advice for consumers and businesses on navigating the new Colorado law for online privacy settings and your personal data. Before we begin, do you want to help the world and your wallet? From now until August 30th, when you open a new First Bank checking account, you'll help save bees, conserve water, and plant trees. Open a First Bank checking account today. Learn more by visiting efirstbank.com/green. First Bank. Banking for good. Member FDIC. Certain restrictions and requirements apply. See any First Bank branch for details. Now let's go back in time with some Colorado history. On this day in 1950, the Denver Tramway Company's rail service creaked to a halt. Denver first introduced horse-drawn trolleys in 1891. The Denver Tramway Company upgraded the effort with cable cars in 1888 and electric streetcars in 1889. Streetcars enabled urban sprawl and white flight, often partnering with land speculators to develop new neighborhoods accessible from downtown. By the 1920s, buses began replacing trolleys. By 1950, the automobile boom had made operating the trains unviable. However, by 1994, Denver found its love for trains again. The reintroduction of the light rail helped revive Denver's historic downtown and reconnect the suburbs to the city. Before we continue, this summer, go wild for Front Range air quality. Walk, bike, or scoot for short-distance trips to reduce harmful ground-level ozone. Sign up for ozone alerts to know when it matters most. Learn more at simplestepsbetterair.org. Next, our feature story.
Hey, thanks for tuning in today, everybody. I'm David Krause, one of the editors here at The Sun. And on the Tuesday edition of The Sun Up, we typically talk a little business and tech with our reporter, Tamara Chung. Tamara, how's your day going?
It's going great. How are you?
I'm doing great. Hey, we've got a holiday week. So we got a little something for people to stew on while they got a couple extra days off. Tamara, you wrote in this week's What's Working column. Newsletter came out Saturday morning. Really broke down this new Colorado privacy law. A lot of people don't know about really the details, but it went into effect Monday. It was passed back in 2021, and it kind of makes Colorado the second state that to require what they call a universal opt-out as far as your privacy settings and managing cookies, all that techie stuff that Tamara loves to dig into. So Tamara, let's just jump right in. Kind of give us a background on what consumers need to know about this new law.
Sure, yeah. So the first thing is actually that the law has been in effect. But there is a new deadline that was Monday. But let me sort of lay it out because this can be as confusing or as clear as you want it to be. So this is the Colorado Privacy Act. And what it does is give consumers all these great options. Like, you know, I don't want my data tracked. I don't want my personal data stored anywhere. I want to request that it be deleted, stop collecting it, or you know what? I mean, maybe I don't mind so much. So, you know, I understand, like, if you're a member of the Colorado Sun, you know, we're obviously going to have some of your data here. So there's this, like, you know, push and shove between businesses and consumers. But ultimately, this is a pretty strict privacy law, one of the strongest in the nation. And as you mentioned, it's second to California, which passed its law back in 2020, I believe. But anyway, so the thing is, you know, websites, any website a Colorado consumer visits, as of a year ago, July 2023, website owners are supposed to have options to let people opt out of their data being collected or allow folks to request data be removed and all sorts of stuff like that. But what just happened that went into effect July 1st, Monday, is this universal tool that essentially, you know, sets a person's privacy preferences all over the internet. So it's kind of this strange thing where websites embed some code, and then this code interacts with how a consumer has already set their privacy settings. And so, you know, if you have seen messages or notices on websites that say, you know, click here to opt into, you know, do not sell my information or do not share my information, or just a simple okay, which I guess means, yeah, go ahead and share my information, you actually might start seeing these messages less and less. Because now that there's this universal opt-out feature, these websites are going to know what your preferences are. So they're not going to ask you anymore, although you should be able to see your settings on the site as well.
So, Tamara, what do we have to do when I'm on Chrome? Is there something I need to do if people use Safari or, you know, Firefox or whatever the other browsers are? I basically hang out on Chrome. What do I need to do to get it set up on my end?
Yeah, so there was a global organization that essentially set a standard out there. So there's a lot of privacy tools that have adopted it, and even some internet browsers that have adopted these options. The organization is called the Global Privacy Control, and members of it include like Consumer Reports, the New York Times. I mean, they built this technical spec. So, you know, with just like two lines of code, businesses can update their sites and be sort of in compliance. Whereas consumers, if you use a browser like DuckDuckGo, which is known for its privacy, or Brave, which also is known for protecting its, you know, consumers, you won't have to do anything because they default to the strictest protection. So, you know, wherever you go online, websites will know, that Brave user doesn't want, we can't use any of their data. We can't sell it. We can't share it. Other browsers like Firefox also have the option, but you have to opt in. So you need to go into your settings. And then there's, you know, browsers like Chrome, Google Chrome. And, you know, as a lot of folks know, Google is makes most of its money on advertising. So it's more of a delicate relationship there. So there are plugins or extensions that Chrome users can add. You know, I use one called Privacy Badger. There's another one called Opt Me Out, like a cat, meow. And these not only opt you out automatically of all these websites, but those tools add an extra feature like blocking ads and blocking cookies. So, you know, that really cuts down on trackers and of course, ads if those kind of annoy you.
So you had in the story kind of the breakdown, Tamara, on, you know, you say all these companies have to do it, but are there exemptions? What are those exemptions? Is it only Colorado-based companies that have to do it, or what does that look like as far as the businesses go?
Yeah, so, you know, every site that interacts with a Colorado customer needs to get this done. And the thing about it is, you know, it's not just Colorado customers, but California has a law, and they've had it in place for a few years. So they've had to, you know, businesses that deal with California customers also have had to do this. And, you know, beyond that, you know, I think Connecticut's adding it. Several other states are. Several other states will add it next year. So, you know, for the most part, businesses that operate, you know, or serve customers in multiple states probably just want to go ahead and add these privacy, you know, this privacy tool to their sites, because, you know, it seems like it would be hard to just pull out just the Colorado visitors to your site or the California visitors to your site. I mean, it's not totally impossible. And there are tools to help businesses sort of manage that. Those are called, those are called CMPs, which stand for consent management providers. And it's kind of like a dashboard that helps a website control their privacy settings, make sure their privacy policies are there, and basically that they're in compliance with all the different laws, because there are many, you know, these are all similar laws, but there's all sorts of differences between them. And that is probably giving a lot of businesses a headache. I know I reached out to a couple chambers and some companies to see how they went ahead and complied, or if what they're advising to other businesses. And I didn't hear back from any of them. So I know it's hard to find some of this information. So I tried to put it all in this one column. There's lots of links of tools that consumers can download and use, but also for businesses, like these dashboard programs that they can use to manage their sites. I also mentioned, how do you exactly embed this new requirement into your website by Monday? There's, you know, I've listed some specific instructions about it. So hopefully that addresses both sides. I mean, you know, there's a lot of other controversies and things to talk about here, but, you know, for the main part, this is trying to be a practical call.
Tamara, last thing, when you talk to the Attorney General's office, you know, and you talk about different deadlines and all that, what's their kind of stance on, you know, how do you enforce something like this? Do they have any ideas on enforcement? Are they more guidance orientated, or what's the AG's office doing to kind of see this through?
The AG's office, you know, they do have the enforcement power for this. And, you know, what can happen is, if they find that a website is out of compliance, they could seek penalties. The AG's office could seek penalties of up to $20,000 per violation, and $50,000 if the victim is an elderly person. So this is kind of expensive law, you know, but when I have spoken to the Attorney General Phil Weiser, you know, in the past and even now for this story, you know, he's trying to be educational, you know, and trying to make sure businesses understand what the rules are and what needs to be done, you know, for the next year. I mean, well, actually through the end of the year, you know, he'll be, you know, it's more of a grace period where folks can get into a compliance. I mean, there's a lot of information out there on the AG site to help companies. But after the first of the year, next year, you know, he could clamp down and, you know, for the companies that are willfully violating the law, you know, I they'll probably end up issuing more press releases about how they are going after those the perpetrators of you know, companies that are essentially not abiding by consumer data laws and probably selling our data.
Tamara, I really appreciate you breaking it down in the column and also on the podcast today. Really good for our listeners. If you haven't already signed up for the What's Working column, it comes out every Saturday. It's one of our free newsletters. You can check that out at coloradosun.com/working. Tamara, make it a great day.
You too. Thanks, everyone, for listening.
You can read more at coloradosun.com. Finally, here are a few stories that you should know about today. A Westminster-based power provider has agreed to pay $70 million in aid to Moffat County and the city of Craig to offset impacts of a plan to shutter a regional coal-fired power plant. The Tri-State Generation and Transmission Association also agreed to locate a new gas-fired plant in Moffat County and hand over a water right to the county. The settlement is part of the utility's electric resource plan and must still be approved by the Public Utilities Commission. The plan lays out the utility's proposal for developing the resources to meet future electricity demand. New data shows Colorado's outbreak of bird flu among dairy cattle is now the worst in the country, with more recent cases than any other state. Colorado had identified 25 herds with cases of avian influenza as of Monday morning. Of those, 21 were identified within the past month, and the herds are still in quarantine. 4 other cases were identified earlier, and quarantines have since been lifted. The rapid and still largely mysterious spread in Colorado, which is hardly a leading dairy state, contributes to growing concerns that U.S. health authorities are not doing enough to contain the virus. With wings colored like desert camouflage, Colorado's Miller moths have again invaded the state, annoying people and pets as they do every summer. But there is good news, they do not destroy our wardrobes. Insect experts say Miller moths do not chew on wool or any other fabric. Their main goal during the annual pilgrimage from the Eastern Plains to the Front Range is to find other moths with which to reproduce. Researchers say the moths are essential to the environment, pollinating flowers and serving as food for bats and birds. For more information on all of these stories, visit our website, coloradosun.com. And don't forget to tune in again next time. Now, a quick message from our team.
This is Christina Pritchett, Marketing and Events Specialist at the Colorado Sun. In my role, I get to witness the Sun's impact on our state firsthand. I always leave our events feeling inspired by those who attend and share the impact that the Sun has in their daily lives. If you're a follower of the Sun, please reach out and tell us what you think of our reporting and let us know how it makes a difference in your life. The Sun is member supported, so if you're not yet a member, please consider joining us today at coloradosun.com/join.